It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Recent investigations have found deadly exposure to rock dust while mining coal is a workplace hazard. That's well documented.
There were excessive exposures of toxic silica dust to coal miners that regulators should have known about because it's their own data.
But silica dust regulations haven't changed much over the years. We'll hear about it in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. President of the West Virginia Board of Education, David Perry, joined host Suzanne Higgins on the legislature today last night to discuss some of the biggest education issues, concerns, and ideas for this legislative session, including an omnibus education bill expected to be taken up this week in Senate Education. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
Let's begin with what the education community is bracing for this week, and that is what has been referred to as the omnibus education bill coming out of the Senate Education Committee. Do you have a sense of what might be in that bill?
I understand that bill will come out Thursday. It's my understanding that, as you've said, there's numerous topics in it, and it's all company to the pay raise bill, which will have areas in it that deal with the payday protection plan, administrative one-year contracts, the charter schools, and the savings account, and some other issues that deal with the work stoppage and ability to pay teachers during a work stoppage.
Let's just pause right there and go through those items and tell us the position of the board.
Well, we would take a position on the payday restriction bill. It has to do with deductions and being able to deduct from the payroll, but it would affect a great deal of nonprofits. However, charter schools we're adamantly opposed to, in that anything that detracts from or takes away from public education dollars, we wouldn't be in favor of, as well as the payroll vouchers, which has commonly been known as a voucher. And that, again, is directed towards special education students and gives parents the ability to take money out of public education funds to fund education within homeschooling and so forth. So we'd be opposed to that also.
And why?
Okay, anything that detracts from and anything that takes dollars away from an underfunded public education system already, we certainly wouldn't want to advocate for that.
Well, let me ask you, your level of communication with the Senate Education Committee, with the new chair of that committee?
We have talked informally with the education chair about other issues and so forth, but as far as this omnibus bill, there's been no communication of substance with the education chair around this bill, as well as other stakeholders, I understand, from the PTAs to the Superintendent Association to the Principal Association to various teacher organizations.
Again and again, we've heard that there needs to be more from the leadership, from that committee, that there needs to be more local control when it comes to everything from curriculum to calendars to disciplinary action to personnel matters. Does this concern you?
We too, as the State Board of Education, have advocated for local control. We very much, many of the policies we've passed over the last 18 months, and particularly the last 6 months, have given local control in terms of discipline, local control in terms of curriculum, local control in terms of calendar has always been there, which allows boards of education to apply for waivers.
I want you to comment on what is truly abysmal statistics. And again, when the conversation with leadership talks about the priority of education, and even not only leadership but both parties, we are hearing over and over the statistics that are really, really disturbing. Just last year's statistics for fourth graders who were tested, only 35% of our fourth graders are proficient in math, only 32 in reading. When you go to the eighth grade, 24% are proficient in math, only 28 in reading. You know, it just begs the overall question, who and what is responsible?
This is a problem that has existed for a number of years. This is the first time that the Department of Education and West Virginia Board of Education has addressed it and will be addressing it, and it's one of their priorities through 2020. and that's to improve mathematics scores. Of course, the eighth grade scores, we're 37th in the country in terms of number of students in fourth grade who scored at or above proficiency levels. So I think the numbers may not be as dismal as they're publicated to be.
Again, that was David Perry, president of the West Virginia Board of Education, speaking with host Suzanne Higgins on the legislature today. To hear the full interview, visit our website at wvpublic.org. A multi-year investigation led by veteran NPR reporter Howard Berkus revealed last month that more than 2,000 coal miners are now suffering from the most severe form of black lung disease. The investigation uncovered the data collected for decades by federal regulators showed miners were being exposed to toxic silica dust generated when miners cut rock to get to the coal. But despite clear warnings from the data, the mining industry and government regulators did little to stop silica exposures, leaving thousands of coal miners to pay the price. Berkus spoke with energy and environment reporter Brittany Patterson about the joint NPR-PBS Frontline Investigations documentary film, Coal's Deadly Dust, which begins airing tonight.
So this documentary is really a visual representation of an investigation you published about a month ago for NPR, where you reported that there are more than 2,000 coal miners suffering from an advanced form of black lung disease and sort of what the federal government knew. Could you start by telling us a little bit about how this story came to be on your radar?
This really has its origins with the Upper Big Branch mine disaster in 2010 in West Virginia. One of the investigative findings that came out of that disaster was evidence of black lung disease in the coal miners who died. This was found in the autopsies of the miners, and the rate of disease among those miners was just off the charts high, you know, more than 70%. And that triggered an investigation with the Center for Public Integrity in 2012 on what we then were looking at, which was the resurgence of black lung disease. Since then, I've been interested in looking deeper and looking at what we now understand to be an epidemic of progressive massive fibrosis, the worst stage of black lung disease. We documented that in 2016, and what I've been interested in looking at further, and I spent the last year looking at, was, you know, basically why this could happen. How is it possible that there could be such severe black lung disease among so many miners in this day and age if the regulatory system that existed to protect them had worked the way it should?
I think one thing that really struck me in watching the film and in learning about your investigation is hearing from former officials who used the term regulatory failure. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about why that term applies in this case.
What we found when we went through 30 years of Mine Safety and Health Administration data was evidence that that there were excessive exposures of toxic silica dust to coal miners, thousands of them, over the years that regulators should have known about because it's their own data.
In addition to having this deep data dive, you also met with dozens of coal miners that have advanced black lung disease and their families. And we hear some of their stories and we see what it's like living with this disease. We even go to a rehab facility with one of them. Can you tell us about maybe one miner that whose story really stuck with you and is sort of illustrative of what you heard while reporting this investigation?
Well, as you say, you know, we actually talked to three dozen miners, all of whom are very sick with progressive massive fibrosis, the advanced stage of black lung. They will die from this disease or from pneumonia, something else that's a result of this disease. Talking to them and their families was heart-wrenching. We do feature two miners in the Frontline documentary who you'll see, Danny Smith and Greg Kelly. Danny's only 47 years old. He's got two daughters, one of whom is in college, one is in high school. He hopes to live long enough to watch them graduate. He's already picked out his burial plot in the family cemetery. He's only 47 years old. Greg Kelly is in his early 50s and is very sick, and he can't play with his grandson. He can't walk up the driveway to collect his mail. It's just really horrific to watch these miners who all, you know, were proud of doing a really hard job. They love the work. They love the challenge of it. These are all sort of robust people who have been reduced to shadows of themselves.
You partnered with documentary filmmaker Elaine Sheldon to produce this story. Why take it from the airwaves to the television screen?
Working with Elaine was an incredible gift for me. And she's, you know, she's just perfectly situated to bring the story to the screen because she comes from West Virginia. She grew up in a coal mining family. She understands miners and mining. And she's really adept at capturing the landscapes of Appalachia and also the people of Appalachia. And you'll see that in this film. As a viewer, we get to feel the story in a different way, and we really connect with the miners who are featured.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful.
It's one thing to present data, of which we have plenty. And we also found documents that showed, made it quite clear that the Mine Safety and Health Administration was not only aware of increases in disease, but also made the connection to silica and advised the industry to do, you know, to voluntarily at least look at its practices to try to reduce exposure to silica. That was more than 20 years ago. None of this is new. This was at the time when the miners who are sick and dying now were working. So the failure to do something back then has had a terrible consequence. And what the film helps us see and experience is the human impact of that.
Well, since the NPR investigation has dropped, I mean, have we had any reaction from lawmakers or stakeholders? Have we seen any policy changes?
The one firm reaction that took place was within hours of the NPR story airing in December. The incoming chairman of the House Education and Labor Committee, Representative Bobby Scott of Virginia, he's now the chairman of that committee. He said he was going to call hearings. You know, that means that they can call the officials of the Mine Safety and Health Administration, past officials. They can call miners if they choose to, and really explore this in more detail and ask officials, why didn't you do anything? And ask them, so why aren't you doing anything now in terms of direct attention to silica? The message all these years from the data, from the studies, from the recommendations, were you've got to address silica separately and specifically, and you have to regulate it more tough than you are now. Even as the agency was getting tougher on coal mine dust, it punted on silica. It didn't do anything about silica. And so I think part of what the congressional committee will be interested in is, why hasn't the current administration now taken up that recommendation that is decades old and paid more specific attention to silica, which so far it has not?
That was energy and environment reporter Brittany Patterson speaking with NPR investigative correspondent Howard Berkus about coal's deadly dust. The NPR PBS Frontline investigative documentary airs tonight at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting Television. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.